Right now, though, we're talking about phonics instruction and the way we go about teaching kids to read. The State Department of Public Instruction said last week that it endorses explicit phonics instruction. And the backdrop here is the so-called reading wars, the decades-long battle about how to best teach reading to students, whole language versus phonics, and literacy experts going toe-to-toe on this fraught issue. So what do you think of DPI endorsing phonics in schools? Do you believe it can help a child read? What do you hope changes in instructional materials for reading? We're at 800-642-1234. Mark Seidenberg is a professor in the Department of Psychology at UW-Madison. He is a cognitive neuroscientist who has studied language, reading, and dyslexia for more than 30 years. Mark, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Glad to be here, Kate.
So help us better understand phonics. How does this style of teaching work? What does it entail?
Phonics is a part of what children need to learn when they're becoming readers. It refers to teaching methods that emphasize connecting print with speech. So a beginning reader in kindergarten or first grade already knows about spoken language, and their problem for reading is to learn how print relates to the stuff they already know from speech. So phonics refers to instruction that emphasizes making connection between print and sound.
So you're breaking down the sounds of a word and breaking down each syllable then?
So it's a little more complicated. Children already know quite a lot about words and their components, typically when they start school. And what we have in English is an alphabet. And what the alphabet helps you to do is to think of words as consisting of discrete sounds, which we call phonemes. So if you have the word bat, it has three sounds, b, a, and t. And in an alphabet, they're represented by symbols. So what phonics does is say, connect those written symbols to the units that are in spoken language. And if you can do that, then you can use everything you've learned up to the start of reading and bring it to bear on reading books and texts.
Yeah, you can take it for a drive, so to speak. So how does phonics instruction then differ or contrast to the whole language approach?
Well, I think in 2020, no one would say they were using whole language. Whole language was the term that was applied in what I call Reading Wars 1, which was peaked in the early 2000s. Whole language is an approach which emphasizes children's knowledge of the world and children's ability to use thinking and reasoning to figure out what's on the page as they're reading. And that's an important thing to do once you have certain basic skills, like being able to tell that the letters that you're reading represent a particular word. So the debate was about should children be introduced to instruction that emphasizes figuring out how letters combine and how letters represent spoken language, which is what phonics emphasizes, or should we skip that because it's boring and it just goes straight to trying to get kids to understand meaning? Whole language was a kind of meaning-based what we would call a top-down approach. It uses a lot of thinking and reasoning and background knowledge. And what I would say about that is, yeah, that's relevant, of course, once the kid has the ability to figure out the identities of words really quickly. And that's what phonics and other basic skills instruction emphasizes.
So, yeah, go ahead.
The other side, people thought that there's no way to escape the fact that the kid has to learn how print represents speech. That's what writing systems do. So when you look at the letters on the page, it does represent the sounds of the words. And if you can make that connection, then the child's going to do well. If you skip that step, then you make learning to read harder for the child. Some children will succeed anyway because they're getting help at home or something else, but there isn't really an alternative to helping the kid learn how the printed code works so that they can go on to these other things like learning from what they're reading, using what they know to expand on their knowledge and do the other things we want them to be able to do when they really can read. So the idea that I think the debate focuses on phonics and it's really kind of too narrow. What the kid needs to know is how print works and how it relates to spoken language. Those things get deeply integrated in the brain in skilled readers. They become deeply intertwined, and that's the goal. Mm-hmm. Phonics is the instruction that might help the kid get there, and a certain amount of it is needed at a certain point in beginning reading. The idea is to get in, get out, and move on. The kid needs a certain amount of this, and then once they've acquired this kind of basic skill, yes, we move on to more complicated things and interesting things that kids can do with reading.
So now that the Department of Public Instruction is endorsing explicit phonics instruction, what does that mean for school districts?
It's not clear if it means anything. It's a positive step because it's a recognition that at a certain point in the child's development, this kind of instruction is really important. However, it seems to be mostly a response to what I would call Reading Wars 2, which is the agitation that has developed over the last few years, mostly led by parent groups, in response to just frustration over the inability of the educational establishment to deal with literacy problems. You know, what's happening in Wisconsin is happening in about 40 other states. They're all having these discussions about whether to pass legislation that would do something about how children are taught to read and what to do about dyslexia. Legislation is like a desperation move. After decades of the educational establishment failing to get its own house in order. So it's good that they've made this announcement, and now they have to show, what does this actually involve? And I have a really basic concern. The basic concern is that you can announce that you're in favor of something, but nothing works unless the teachers are on board. And whether the teachers are on board here is not clear at all. You cannot just mandate, teach this way, if the teachers don't believe it's valuable. And the problem, as I outlined, as I discussed in some detail in a book that I wrote about reading and the history of these wars, is that teachers are not in general on board. For the most part, they've been taught that phonics is something that only poor readers need and that connecting print and sound is not important. And so DPI can establish a policy, but unless teachers think that it's the right policy, and moreover, unless teachers have the skills to be able to implement the policy, then it's not clear that it'll have any impact.
Talking with Mark Seidenberg, he is a professor in the Department of Psychology at UW-Madison. He's a neurocognitive scientist. Talking about phonics instruction in the classroom, are you a reading specialist? What are common struggles you see among young readers? What do you recommend parents do to help their kids read? Are you an elementary school teacher? How do you work reading into your curriculum? Join in 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Ed now, joining us from Madison. Good morning, Ed.
Well, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Seidenberg, over the years, I think I'd seen your name in terms of working with neuroscientists involved in interventions for students who struggled with the early speech language function. I think you probably know some of the same neuroscientists that I know from the field over the last 20 plus years. What, in your estimation, is the value of programs that are out there currently being used by schools? And is there one or are there more than one program or are there any that really help kids that are struggling with their language development?
That is a really great question, because there's so much software out there and there's so much stuff on the internet for parents who would really like to help their kids. The problem is there isn't any consumer guide to this stuff. And frankly, a lot of it is really shallow. And I feel like there's a bit of a gold rush going on in terms of there's a need because the schools aren't providing certain kinds of instruction and aren't providing certain kinds of support. So there is a need for other ways to help your kids. And the marketplace is filling that need. Unfortunately, it's just not clear that these programs are effective and they tend to be quite expensive. You know, parents want to do the best for their kids. And if they can afford it, which is another issue, they will take a flyer on a program because what if it works? What if it will help their struggling child? What I say is they shouldn't have to be doing that. There should be more instruction, competent instruction in the classroom, and it's really putting the burden on the, unfortunate to put the burden on the parent to find software to take the place of what really could have been done with more effective instruction in the schools.
Do you see phonics as an interventional approach when other forms are not working for
Absolutely
that young
not.
Reader?
Absolutely not. So that historically, the line about phonics was, well, that's only something that we avoid at all costs. It's still true. It's quite amazing. I've been reviewing various curricula that are very popular in the schools, and the sounding out the word is the last thing that they recommend. You're supposed to guess the word. You're supposed to use various strategies to kind of figure it out. This is how to make reading words very hard. Phonics is not just for poor kids. The idea is really not phonics. It's how does the child learn enough about print to connect it to what they know about speech. Phonics methods, it refers to teaching methods that could help make that connection. And it's not an option, really. We don't know of, it's not that skilled readers read in vastly different ways. There's a huge amount of research suggesting that when you become a skilled reader, becoming a skilled reader is the process by which print gets linked up with speech in behavior, in brain. And that's what early instruction has to promote.
We're talking about phonics instruction in Wisconsin schools with UW-Madison cognitive neuroscientist Mark Seidenberg, who studies language, reading, and dyslexia. Should teaching kids to read be left to the schools? Are you a reading specialist? What are some common struggles that you see in young readers? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're talking phonics and learning to read here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Being able to make the connection between the letters, their combinations, and the sounds that make up the words, it's complicated stuff, and all kids learn differently. Now we have word out of the State Department of Public Instruction that it's putting out some guidance on phonics instruction for districts to follow. You can join in on your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Mark Seidenberg is a professor in the Department of Psychology at UW-Madison, and he stays with us. Let's go back to the phones now. Dave is in Milwaukee. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. So wonderful. This program is essential. I work with the Milwaukee Public Schools, and I will tell you the biggest problem we have is that a lot of the programs for instruction and the instructors themselves are Caucasoid. They're white or whitish, Jewish, Italian, Polish, whatever. But the issue is this. We need instructors and programs that are developed by the actual genetic, by African Americans, by diverse people, by people of color, Puerto Ricans, Haitians, Dominicans, trans or whatever, non-binary, things that are so that these people could, because you can't learn if you're being taught by someone who doesn't exactly match up what you are somehow genetically or what you identify
Dave, I want to pause there on how you teach educators and how their education in teaching kids to read applies to so many different demographics and the makeup of the classroom.
Well, this is a really crucial point, but I don't think it's because every kid learns differently or that people of color learn differently. I mean, I don't accept the idea that there are these vast differences between groups in how they learn. Certainly, cultural sensitivity and making materials relevant to people's lives and cultures is important. The more relevant thing is that the instructional methods that we have, which include things the teachers have been taught about what should happen in the classroom and the curricula that they use, the expensive books that and they use to guide their classroom practices, are resolutely middle class. They are very much oriented to middle class kids. And the crucial point is that they make assumptions about what will happen in the home to supplement what they are doing in the classroom. Those assumptions are about a person in the home who is able to help the kid with practicing and learning additional skills, there being resources to buy the books, there's being someone in the home who speaks the language and can help the child, has the time to help the child, that there being other kinds of access to the internet and information on that may cost money. The curricula and practice that we have are discriminatory. What they do is work very well for kids who have this kind of support. In fact, they're predicated on this kind of support being available. And that is true for some kids. It's the kids who are middle class or up who are advantaged with respect to education in the first place. They do not work with respect as well with children from low-income backgrounds. And, you know, we talk a lot about how poverty has a huge impact on educational outcomes, which it absolutely does. But what we don't talk about is the way that educational practices magnify these effects. And the way that we teach kids to read is a primo example of how policies that we've put in place and practices that we use can magnify the existing differences in opportunity. I think this is really, there's a class action suit waiting to happen because these materials and approaches are so biased against people, children who come from poorer backgrounds.
Let's go to Mark now in Oconomowoc with observations on this. Hi, Mark.
Hi, good morning. Say, I just wanted to relate that I really endorse the idea of phonics. My kids, late 90s, early 2000s, grew up in a school, I guess what you'd call an advantage school system, suburb northeast or north of Milwaukee on the northeast side, and they didn't use phonics. They used this thing called inventive spelling, I think it was called, and it was an absolute disaster. I mean, kids in the third and fourth grade are spelling phone, F-O-N-E. And, you know, phonics takes a rap sometimes. It can be difficult, but I just really believe it works. And to your last point, my wife and I ended up teaching our kids to spell because, it's a skill. It's just knowledge that has to be had and has to be learned.
And, thank you, Mark. In tandem to his comments there, what should be happening at home?
Well, there's a lot of things that should be happening at home, and I want to mention things that should be happening before the kid even gets to school. So one of the things we've really learned from the science is the crucial role of the child's early spoken language experience. So kids learn to a spoken language, how to comprehend and speak, and they know a language before reading instruction even starts. And one of the things we found out is that children learn spoken language through interacting with people, through use, and through experience. And what we found in numerous studies is that children's early language experience varies quite a bit. Some kids learn more about language, it shows up in vocabulary, it shows up in the range of sentence structures they can understand, and it shows up in their knowledge of how you can use language to communicate. So there are these large differences among children in terms of their knowledge of spoken language on the first day of kindergarten. That is a huge predictor of how they will do with reading. Why? Because learning to read is the process of figuring out how print relates to spoken language. So children who don't know as much about spoken language will have more difficulty. In other words, children are behind with respect to reading and pre-reading skills on the first day of school. That is not because they weren't taught right or didn't get any phonics. That's because of things that happened before any of that started, and we can tell what it's related to. It's related to their exposure to spoken language and their knowledge of the world, their knowledge of what language is used for. So you ask what could be done. I really think emphasis has to be placed on avoiding reading problems before they occur, and the best way to do that is through building the child's spoken language before they get to school. How to do that? One way to do that is by reading books with your children. You know, everyone thinks that reading to children is important, which it is for a lot of reasons. But one of the things that's been discovered recently through research mainly here at UW by a professor in our department, Mary Ellen McDonald, is that children learn about language from the books that they're read. So children's books have vocabulary and they have syntax, grammar, that doesn't occur in, that the child won't encounter in spoken language. So when you are reading with a child, you are actually giving them language enrichment. You're exposing them to a wider range of words and how they're used. And also you're teaching them things about the world beyond their immediate experience. So reading to children isn't just fun and a way to get them excited about reading. It's a way of enriching their spoken language, and that is a crucial factor.
As we start to wrap up here, Mark, what suggestions would you give to DPI, the Department of Public Instruction, on where they go from here with phonics?
Well, I think DPI is really trying to catch up. The problem is DPI can, there's two problems. One is DPI can announce a policy, but as I said before, the question will be teachers have to be on board. And I think that rather than buying new software and rather than buying new curricula and trying to solve problems by spending money on that kind of stuff, they should spend money on teacher support, support for teacher in-service teachers in the states that are actually making a large, engaged in large efforts to improve literacy, like Mississippi and Arkansas and others. One of the key features is that they are helping teachers to gain additional skills, and they are putting reading coaches in the schools to work with them so that they can employ best practices. Just making an announcement that you're going to support something that you've opposed for a very long time, it's a step, but it has to be followed through. I think DPI is a huge bureaucracy. I'm not clear exactly how much they are contributing to advancing these issues. They seem to be sort of following the will of various kinds of interest groups. I hope that they take a more active role in supporting teachers so that they can do the best job they can with children, which is what they want.
That was Mark Seidenberg, professor in the Department of Psychology at UW-Madison. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.